Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And there's lots of them. But today is August 1st, 2023. It is a Tuesday. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy National Night Out Day. How's that for an oxymoron?
Really?
On the first Tuesday in August to promote police community partnerships in neighborhoods across the country, focusing on community, raising awareness through camaraderie and communication. So the hope is by improving relationships to make our neighborhoods safer. Shining a spotlight on community police programs, National Night Out increases connections between those who serve and their neighborhoods. Hey, on another positive note, it's the official dog days of August begin. The high temperature is expected to be below 110 in Arizona today. Rejoice! The first such break in 31 days. Now we'll be back through 110 by Thursday, so enjoy the respite. Quick aside, I remember at a conference in Palm Springs I attended 20 years ago, when the temperature was approaching 105 at 9 in the morning, after a quarter of a mile into a planned two-mile run with my colleague, I turned around and took a dive in our hotel's pool to cool off. The problem? Pool's temperature was about 95, so not such a cooling off, I'm afraid. But there you have it.
It's a dry heat.
Dry or not, boy, that was hot.
It's a dry heat. I lived in Arizona for 28 years or something like that. You get used to it.
That's nice.
You get used to it. I think the hottest when I missed the hottest the first time it reached 120 something.
Oh,
I think
gosh.
It was back in 1990.
Wow.
It would have been in 1990 when I was there. I was actually living in Boise at that time, but my mother was in Arizona, and they had it hit 120 plus.
Oh.
And I think they had to shut down the airport to some degree.
Oh. Wow.
Because the macadam just gets so soft.
Oh my gosh!
That you the planes can't land.
Yeah, that's
and
that's
it damages
amazing.
The runways and so forth. And I don't know if they added some chemical compound to keep them from, melting like they did
sinking.
Back then in the, pardon?
Keep the airplane from sinking.
Keep it from sinking, yeah. Jeez. And
boy, 1990, you must have just been 6 years old back then.
I was. But I have a great memory. I can also remember wearing my high heels and your heels just sinking down when you're crossing the street. You had to walk on your tippy toes so you wouldn't sink. But August is usually their monsoon season. I think it's a little longer. It used to be just you could always count on August being the monsoon season. But I think with the amount of the heat islands that have been created with all the cement, macadam, and all the additional water and so forth, the humidity is a little bit stronger than what it used to be way back in the 70s and 80s when I was there. So it is a little more difficult. But hey, when it's 105, it's just as hot at 110. You know, hot is hot. So. What bothered me more than even the heat of the day was the evening when it didn't cool off past, you know, when it was still 95 at, you know, 3 in the morning. That's when it bothered me the most.
That makes for a long day.
Yes, it does. But anyway, enough of my remembering the good old days, but let's go ahead and see what the good old day for gold was. And I guess it wasn't so good, but for the buyers out there, it's a great day. You have silver down $20 at $19.45. Silver was down 45 cents, still at $24.38. You have platinum was down 21 at $941, and palladium was down 47 at $1,273. The USDX today is 102.22. So, yep, it's back up to 102. So, yeah, that put a little damper on the dollar today. Crude oil was down 13 cents at 81.67. Paper markets today, I don't think there was a lot of big changes in the markets. Not really. You had the Dow was still up 71 points. S&P was down 12, and the NASDAQ was down 62. European markets were a little bit different. They were all down at least, Germany was down the most at 1.25%. France was down 1.25%, but the FTSE was only down less than 0.5%. Asian markets was mixed. The Hang Seng and the Shanghai were negative, but just fractionally. 10-year yield is back up over 4.033 on the 10-year yield, 4.033. And natural gas was down 2.35% at 2.57 on natural gas. So there you have it. And, I guess, Dave, I've seen a lot of reports today where manufacturing pretty much in a lot of like China and, you know, I think some of the European nations, the manufacturing was definitely lower. And our manufacturing might have improved in July, but it's still in contraction territory. So, you know, we'll see how they spin it, because they all say, it's all great and so forth, and it still remains negative. You know, the purchasing managers, the supply management's purchasing index ticked up to 46.4 last month from 46. Okay, so it's up. But it has to be over 50. To make it show that it is improving or expanding, I should say. July marked the 9th consecutive month of contraction. Now, this is a continuation of a downward trend. This all started last June. And 16 manufacturing industries reported contraction last month, while only two reported growth. New orders contracted for the 11th straight month in July. The price index moved to 42.6 from 41.8, indicating raw material prices decreased in July. Now, that's the third consecutive month. And, of course, the employment index fell to 44 from 48, Dave.
Well, interestingly, the money firm Jefferies noted, I'm quoting here, broadly, the data show that the manufacturing sector is still mired in a recession.
Oh, I just thought it was, a sector recession.
Yes, a rolling sector recession.
So stupid. Go ahead.
Yes. Their economist Thomas Simons wrote, the sector's been weak for nearly a year now, but there are no signs of a bottom just yet because new order demand remains weak. And until interest rates fall, it's hard to see how capital investment demand will rebound. Now, separately, S&P Global said its manufacturing purchasing managers index increased 49 from 46. It said that new orders contracted as domestic and external demand conditions remained subdued. Their economist Chris Williamson noted the sector continued to suffer from lower demand as a post-pandemic shift in spending from goods to services, plus an ongoing trend of cost-focused inventory reduction led to a further drop in orders.
And yet, bit by bit, the labor market is settling down from the rolling boil of the past 3 years. The number of job openings dipped to its lowest level point in more than 2 years. This is all from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That they released today. The latest job turnover report in June showed that the number of available positions dropped for the second consecutive month, falling to a seasonally adjusted 9.6 million or 1.6 jobs per job seeker, Dave. So,
yeah, how about that?
So I guess it's just another move that, you know, the Fed is enjoying, but,
I guess, you know, the 1.6 jobs is down from a little over 1.9 at its peak. So I guess measuring it that way, there's been that improvement. The JOLTS report also showed that the number of new hires dipped about 300,000. People from 6.2 to 5.9 million. Voluntary quits peeled back to 3.7 mil from 4.1, and layoffs inched down about, 20,000 from 1.55 to 1.53 million. Now, sector-wise, job openings increased in industries like healthcare and state and local government, not including education, where postings fell. And job openings also dropped in industries like transportation, warehousing, utilities, and the federal government. Jobs fell to their lowest level since before the pandemic in June. However, other labor turnover metrics remain farther afield of their pre-pandemic levels. For example, February 2020, openings were just shy of 7 million, quits were 3.5. And layoffs were just shy of 2 million.
What's that all mean, Dave?
Well, you know, in the whole scheme of things, some might say it doesn't mean a whole hill of beans because, you know, the Fed is its own mover and shaker, so to speak. It says it's so data driven, but with so much mixed signaling out there in the economy, it's hard to keep track of just what indeed the Fed is paying attention to other than core PCE. So answer your question, I don't know what it means.
You know, it's just another conflicting report. You know, that's all. That's the way I see it. And, you know, and again, when we're looking at these sector recessions, the housing market, the housing area was in a recession. Now, manufacturing is in a recession. You know, I guess as long as people are eating out, I guess we're not in a recession. They keep buying and putting it on putting their necessities on credit cards. I guess that means that we're not in a recession. So it truly is amazing.
You'll be happy. I'm taking my wife and daughter and grandsons out for my wife's birthday for dinner tonight, and I'm paying cash. So I'm like, maybe I'm just the exception to the rule.
Well, good for you. Good
there
for
you go.
Good for you.
So follow my example, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, yes. Well, we're not the only ones. It's interesting. You have this John LaForge. He's the head of real estate or real asset strategy for Wells Fargo Investment Institute. And, you know, he's telling us that, hey, we're just beginning a gold and silver bull market coming up. He says gold and silver have been underperforming general commodities in a broad neutral trading range for the last 3 years. We've been kind of happy with the way gold and silver has been trading. It's been trading up and down, and it did find that trend, but it's still in a nice trend area. We know it's going higher, but we know it doesn't go straight up. He said that the precious metals market is stuck as investors continue to focus on the tightening U.S. monetary policies and the sharp drop in the U.S. money supply. But he did say that with the Fed nearing the end of its tightening cycle, gold and silver will be on the cusp of a long-term bull market as part of the larger commodity super cycle. He said that it's only a matter of time before the Fed starts pumping money back into the financial markets to keep the economy from slipping into a recession. Well, to keep part of the economy that hasn't slipped already into the recession.
Yeah, right.
He says if we do get this jump back up in money supply, and again, and investors start to worry that we're printing too many of these little pieces of paper, we're certainly going to see that long-term run in gold and silver. And you know what's interesting? He says that he's only looking for the rally to last for about 3 years. Well, that's a nice long rally. And it's interesting, what happens after that rally? Because you're just not going to stop printing money and putting it into the economy to keep it from going into a recession. So in order to stop the run in gold and silver, you'd think that what is going to stop the Fed from printing and you know, the government. So that's a scenario they never talk about.
Yeah, I mean, nothing is going to stop.
No.
In my humble opinion, and it's not just mine. I know you share that and others. Congressional Budget Office says we're going to be over 150% of GDP, down the current policy path.
And it's not sustainable. That's the whole point. It's not sustainable.
Even if there's no major crisis in the next 5 or 10 years, and there likely will be, just staying on our current track, whether you're talking about defense spending, which is fastly approaching $1 trillion a year alone, or discretionary domestic spending, this isn't even talking about entitlements, there's going to be a lot of sales of treasury bonds continuing over the next, over our remaining lifetime. Then we'll see what happens when our kids and their kids wrestle control, if there can be any change, any markdown in debt, or if it'll just be, the reset that Melody's been talking about.
Yeah, and when you think about it, too, I mean, look what they're going to have to spend to, we've already been told that the munitions is low. What do you think it's going to cost? And I don't know if that comes out of the defense budget or not.
Oh, sure. It does.
They'll be over $1 trillion then. Because I'm sure the use of those munitions probably weren't figured in their last budget. So anyway, So that'll be interesting. And I hear the music, and we'll have another topic when we get back from the break. Please stay with us.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. We've got some great specials on some 90% silver, some great deals. We got some 50-cent pieces coming in. We got some quarters. I might even have a few dimes. I usually don't get the dimes because it's just too hard to count. Even though we have machines that count it, it's very easy to drop a dime here or a dime there. And it's just, and people will say to me, well, you know what? I might not need to spend a whole quarter. I might need something smaller. Listen, when we get to the point of using that for purchasing things, what do you think inflation is going to be? So you'll just be using multiple dimes instead of the quarter. So it's just going to be, you know, so it's just as easy to get quarters than it is the dimes. And I know that's what a lot of those that pitch the dimes to sell, that's one of their lines to get folks to buy dimes. But, and then those mercury dimes, I love mercury dimes, but usually they're always so worn out that it's not worth buying the mercury dime. So again, you just get the best quality. You want to buy the best. And they usually will charge you more than for the dimes. They talk you into the dimes so they can charge you more. So we got some great prices and Silver Eagles. They're still selling Silver Eagles, the new ones, 2023, on some of the websites online for $38 and $39. Ours are around $31.50. So it's they're just robbing people, and yet it doesn't seem to matter. it just amazes me how people can get caught up in one thing or another, and they don't care how their money is spent. And so 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We touched on this briefly yesterday, Dave, about more banks making it harder to get a loan. And so I said, it's going to make it harder for the economy to turn around. Their banks are being choosier about extending credit. Sometimes I wonder about that. But anyway, and maybe banks, but I don't know. And we wouldn't be having, like mortgages where making it easier for lower income and lower credit scores to get cheaper funding and everything. So it doesn't seem to me that they're making it more difficult to get a loan, but maybe for businesses, a net 51% of banks said they had tightened lending standards for larger, for larger and medium-sized businesses over the last 3 months. So, Dave, that would tell me that they're in a lot of hot water.
I'll tell you, my wife and I got a letter, snail mail, from credit union, our credit union, that said, unless you have very good or excellent credit, essentially said, don't bother applying for a loan right now.
Wow.
That's suggesting, what's very good? 750. So that's a pretty high threshold. On the one hand, credit unions were known for terrific loan rates when you got them through them.
You would think that you're right, Dave. You think the rate alone would prevent people from qualifying.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to be tough for several more months. Certainly with no loosening of monetary policy on the horizon. Everyone on the Feds have been suggesting, if not outright saying, through next year, they're going to leave rates alone when they hit their peak rate. Hopefully they're at that now. But there could be another 25 basis point increase before the end of the year. It's, again, depends on what happens between now and then. In any event, it's going to be more difficult to get a loan to buy goods.
And it makes you wonder, if it's medium to large businesses and folks, who are out there buying furniture and appliances and so forth. We have people with mortgages below, we talked about this, I think, last week, Dave, people with mortgages below 5% not as likely to sell the home because they don't want to turn around and pay 7% and get less house.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that puts a lot of pressure on that housing market once again. So.
Yes, it does. And, this next article from Zillow shows it's not going to be any easier right now, particularly for people who have mortgage rates that are below 5%. They're much less likely to consider selling their homes right now than those with a higher rate. That certainly makes sense, especially if they're going to unload a home with a real low mortgage or no mortgage, buy another house where they're likely to pay between 6 or 7, unless they've got sterling credit.
That doesn't even make that much difference anymore. And, you know, there's a lot of folks out there who their interest rates are 2 and 3%.
Yeah, 80% of mortgage holders have rates below 5%, according to this this survey.
It's going to take a lot for them to move. And the majority of them are probably, you know, senior citizens that are retired.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, nah, we're not going to move. We're done. We've done that. This is, you know, they're going to have to take me to the nursing home before I'm going to sell my house. And, you know, because a lot of people, you know, unless they're really downsizing and so forth. But
Zillow's own economist, senior economist Jeff Tucker, says it makes a lot of sense to try and ride out the storm.
Yeah. Yeah. A storm? You would never know it. But CVS is cutting 5,000 jobs as the retail pharmacist giant furthers its push into healthcare offerings. The pharmacy chain had about 300,000 employees in the U.S. at the end of last year. The CVS spokesperson confirmed the layoffs and said they're not expected to affect customer-facing colleagues in our stores, pharmacies, clinics, or customer service centers. The spokesperson added that the employees laid off will receive a severance pay and benefits, including access to outpatient services. As part of an enterprise initiative to reprioritize our investments around the care delivery and technology, we must take difficult steps to reduce expenses. So, technology replacing people is the way I read into that too, Dave.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, CVS operates more than 9,000 retail locations and 1,100 walk-in clinics nationwide. It now owns one of the nation's largest health insurers and biggest pharmacy benefits manager, which of course negotiates drug discounts with the manufacturers. Yeah. CVS has sharpened its focus on healthcare over the past few years, following similar moves by rivals like Walgreens and, well, even Amazon. The company moved deeper into patient care with nearly $8 billion acquisitions. Healthcare provider Signify Health, a $10.6 billion deal to buy Oak Street Health.
You know, it really, it really is. I mean, people don't have when you have a company that owns the nation's largest health insurers and the biggest pharmacy benefit manager, I mean, that should be illegal.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, some are saying, and these are probably congressmen and senators who are bought and paid for by Big Pharma, are saying, hey, this is a benefit. This is not a benefit. It's something that benefits consumers. On the
sure
other hand,
it
seems on the face of it, it's a building conflict of interest.
Isn't that what you would call a monopoly?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Certainly. And it's there's just far too much of it that's been allowed. I mean, in multiple industries, but most notably, you know, this healthcare, hospitals, we see a lot of that happening now, far too much with so-called non-profit hospitals that are getting cash out the wazoo, you know, buying up all these individual practices. But, you know, they're only taking the example from the worst of them, the too big to fail banks.
True.
You know, that have bought up thousands of banks over the last 20 years. And
that's true, but you know, banking is one thing, but your healthcare is, it's just, you know,
Well, I agree. It shouldn't be allowed.
It shouldn't be allowed. But you know what? I mean, when you look at, you're right with all these other companies. I mean, look at Microsoft, look at all these companies throughout the years who've, you know, they've tried to go after them to break them up and they can't. The last one, why they broke up was AT&T. And, you know, they get fined. I know, which one was it? Apple got fined by the UK or was it Microsoft? And they just pay the fines and they don't do anything. So, and you're right. Look where the money all goes to and goes to all the legislative, pawns in the,
yes,
in the government. So, central banks, so we have just one message in common. We're not going to tell you exactly what we're about to do anymore. Like they ever really did. The Fed and other central banks have traded clear messages about what's ahead for more ambiguous ones. A dramatic shift in their approach as policymakers enters a more nuanced era. The Bank of Japan is leaving financial markets guessing about how and when it will back off its ultra easy policy. The European Central Bank and the Fed are maintaining optionality about further hikes as inflation has retreated from peak levels. The Fed is at a very different stage of policy making. This is the chief economist at Point 72 Asset Management, Dean Maki. When rates were extraordinarily low, it was clear the Fed had to raise rates a lot from there. That's no longer the case. Central banks use forward guidance to inform the public about what they're likely to do next. Now, this tool makes monetary policy more potent as financial markets react to that guidance. We've said that time and time again. Markets will react more to what they say than what they might actually do. Greenspan said that a long time ago, and I'm in agreement. It's true. People listen to what they have to say more than actually what they do.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, just look at the markets over the past year and a half. markets generally haven't believed what Powell and his others have been saying from meeting to meeting. In May, Powell said we should use forward guidance sparingly when the course of policy is so dependent on uncertain future developments that little really can be said constructively about the future. Then in just last week, he said, I think it's not an environment where we want to provide a lot of forward guidance because of a lot of uncertainty out there. Adding it's possible that we would move rates up at consecutive meetings. We're not taking that off the table, or we might not. It's really going to depend on what the data tell us. That's the best we can do. Well, isn't that what he's always said, what Yellen has always said, what Bernanke before her had always said, and Greenspan and all the others essentially have said? I mean, they talk in a language couched in what I like to call Fed speak, sort of like on the one hand this, on the other hand that, that just leaves the future all that more uncertain. You know, I'm not sure what we could expect them to do otherwise, but don't fool us. Don't lie to us anymore. Don't mislead us and say, you know, you're changing course when this has been the course for decades. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Oh, they all lie. You know, no one can predict the future. It's all their forward guidance. You know, they can, you know, they know what, you know, a quarter point will do to the markets, what it won't do. And it's all based. I mean, when you really look at it, our economy really is Wall Street. I mean, that's, it's sustaining retirement people, their livelihoods. It's the money that, you know, a large part of it is back into the system. That money will be given to their children and grandchildren to spend. And so they will do whatever it takes to protect the Wall Street markets. They don't know when something from left field is going to hit. They might see it. They might know what's going on. They might try to avoid it. And yeah, they never tell us about that, just like they never told us about when they were buying the overnight markets back in 2019. Oh, it's only a billion this week. Yeah, it's only going to last for a couple of weeks. Yeah, continue for how long? Into the trillions of dollars. So, or billions and billions of dollars. So, yeah, look at the trends. Just look at the basics, and it'll tell you everything you need to know, pretty much. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Going down to take a look at me. Come on, baby. Don't say baby. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody off this final segment, take care of other client business. You know where to get her, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, we're not big fans of Elon Musk here at Financial Survival. But some are saying you have to give some credit for moving the world from internal combustion engines to the electronic vehicle of the future. Or do we? Narrative now emerging is that Musk might have actually done more harm than good for the EV industry. That narrative largely ignores, others say, the crucial role played by the stock market. The case against his company, Tesla, is laid out in a now-deleted post on Threads by Facebook, and Asana co-founder Dustin Moskowitz is that two big lies propelled Tesla to its dominance in EVs. The first, Tesla lied about the range of its vehicles at a time when range anxiety was the top concern that buyers had with EVs. I suppose they still do. And the second, Tesla persuaded buyers in shelling out thousands of extra dollars for software with names like Enhanced Autopilot, full self-driving, and so forth. They're all based on the false promise that cars with that software would soon get an update, making them fully autonomous vehicles that could earn money on their own by acting as driverless taxis. Moskowitz says, I call this the biggest Kickstarter rug pull in history. His thesis is that Tesla's lies created a gravitational effect, whereby customers, talented employees, and funding all ended up flowing to Tesla rather than anyone else. Now, forget about Tesla's lies. Moskowitz asserts that other companies, most notably BYD in China, but also Toyota, Nikola, and others, would have had more demand for their own EVs, more access to talented engineers, and more cash flow to develop new models with. Moskowitz wrote, at a high level, I believe Elon accelerated the development of EVs by at most 1 to 2 years. It's plausible he actually paid. Pardon me. On the other side of this debate, even now, EVs make up only a minority of new vehicles sold in the U.S. and most other markets. Ford has been surprised by demand for its hybrid vehicles and is ramping up their own production, even as it continues to lose billions on EV operations. There's one reason above all why a storied and profitable business like Ford would invest so much in EVs, and that's Tesla's market valuation. Tesla's current market cap, about $850 billion versus just $50 billion for Ford, is very real, even if its claims and promises are fake or exaggerated. The only way for legacy car makers like Ford to lay claim to some of that perceived future value is for them to more move aggressively into EVs themselves. The bottom line, the world should be happy that Musk failed to take Tesla private in 2018. Its surprising success as a public company, more than its success as a car maker, is what really has driven the rest of the world to switch to an electric first strategy. Hey, U.S. House members finally reached their August recess this past weekend after a string of unusual and at times contentious incidents that clouded efforts to avoid a government shutdown and signaled that they needed a timeout. House has had a long year so far, from January's marathon speaker election to May and June's close call and defaulting on the federal debt. That wasn't really ever going to happen, not to mention the Freedom Caucus's unprecedented tactics more recently to grind the House floor to a halt. In a surge in personal confrontations and other bizarre incidents, you've got a recipe for serious dysfunction in Washington. One case in point, freshman Rep. Derek Van Orden of Wisconsin was slammed by members of both sides of the aisle after a profanity-laced encounter involving the Wisconsin Republican screaming at a group of teenage pages. Then you have Speaker Kevin McCarthy and Representative Eric Swalwell, both of California, the former Republican, the latter a D, who have long had a combative relationship, reportedly threatened to fight each other, with Swalwell calling McCarthy, another word for kitty, on the House floor. And in another incident, firebrand Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene called fellow Republican Representative Lauren Boebert a little B-I-T-C-H after the latter introduced a competing impeachment bill. Multiple congressional staffers said it was clear members needed to just get out of D.C. Well, see you in September, fellas, just in time for everyone to work very hard on another government shutdown. The same. Well, I guess we don't want them to be the same. Will they ever be better? American Survival Newsletter has hit the streets. I have a piece on the new movie Oppenheimer. Wife and I saw Christopher Nolan's entertaining and compelling, if somewhat incomplete, biopic on Sunday. If there was an empty seat in the IMAX theater for a 2 o'clock matinee, I didn't see it. And if the audience hit the theater to escape the heat and humidity, they didn't get it in theater number 8. To say that Oppenheimer was an emotional edge-of-your-seat scorcher would be quite an understatement. Loud Dolby surround sound system that brought volumes close to those of a Foo Fighters concert didn't hurt the meticulously timed buildup. In fact, I caught myself taking my pulse and wiping more than one bead of sweat from my temple as the movie approached zero in its provocative, tantalizing countdown to the moment the red button was pushed to ignite the first atomic bomb test on that fateful day, July 16, 1945. The test was named Trinity by theoretical physicist and Manhattan Project leader J. Robert Oppenheimer. Trinity was the penultimate culmination of the secret years-long Manhattan Project of the U.S. government. The project's number one goal: beat the Germans in the race to develop a devastating bomb that would end World War II and perhaps stop all future wars from ever starting. We know 78 years later in several forever wars how the latter has turned out, but, well, that's another story. The ironic consummation of the Manhattan Project, the massive deadly explosions in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan, would come a few short weeks after Trinity's successful test, after Germany had already surrendered, isn't lost in Nolan's screenplay. Although the film's main plot focuses on the development of the bomb, Nolan does a really good job of weaving the tragic aftermath of Trinity in World War II, that is, the government's persecution of Oppenheimer as a communist sympathizer that would lead to the revocation of his security clearance and the ruin of his reputation. The Manhattan Project started slowly in 1939, but employed nearly 130,000 people at its peak, cost nearly $2 billion, roughly $25 billion in current dollars. Although research and production took place at more than 30 sites across the country, the U.S., plus the U.K. and Canada, Trinity test activities were largely performed at Los Alamos, New Mexico. A U.S. Department of Energy fact sheet on the Manhattan Project describes Trinity's explosion at 5:30 a.m. like this. Seconds after the explosion came a huge blast wave and heat searing out across the desert. No one could see the radiation generated by the explosion, but they all knew it was there. As the orange and yellow fireball stretched up and spread, a second column, narrower than the first, rose and flattened into a mushroom shape, thus providing the atomic age with a visual image that's become imprinted on the human consciousness as a symbol of power and awesome destruction. About 40 seconds after the explosion, physicist Enrico Fermi stood, sprinkled his pre-prepared slips of paper into the atomic wind, and estimated from their deflection that the test had released energy equivalent to 10,000 tons of TNT. Well, the actual result, it was finally calculated, 21,000 tons, was more than twice what Fermi had estimated with this experiment and four times as much as had been predicted by most scientists at Los Alamos. Soon, shock and euphoria gave way to somber reflections. Physicist Isidore Rabi, in fact, reported that after the initial euphoria, a chill soon set on those present. The test director, Kenneth Bainbridge, called the explosion a foul and awesome display. Expressions of horror and remorse are especially common in the later writings of those who were present. Oppenheimer himself wrote that the experience called to his mind the legend of Prometheus, punished by Zeus for giving man fire, and said also that he thought fleetingly of Alfred Nobel's vain hope that dynamite years earlier would end wars. Most famously, Oppenheimer later recalled that the explosion had reminded him of a line from the Hindu holy text, the Bhagavad Gita, which said, "Now I am death, the destroyer of worlds." Terrifying destructive power of atomic weapons and the uses to which they might be put were to haunt many of the Manhattan Project scientists for the remainder of their lives. Now, if there's a gap in Oppenheimer, it's Nolan's failure to include the after effects on the thousands of Americans who lived in proximity to the Trinity test site. As Tina Cordover, who's a co-founder of the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium, writes, "One film can't do it all, but I can't help feeling that the retelling of this story is a missed opportunity." Contrary to popular accounts, Cordova tells us that more than 13,000 New Mexicans were living within a 50-mile radius of Trinity, most of whom were not warned before or after the test. Surviving eyewitnesses have told Cordova they believe they were experiencing the end of the world. Many simply dropped their knees and recited the Hail Mary in Spanish. Points to a 2010 study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that after the test found radiation levels near some homes in the area reached almost 10,000 times what's currently allowed in public areas. Subsequent studies have further revealed that the fallout from the initial Trinity test and those that followed it in New Mexico and Nevada reached 46 states. Indeed, as the late Helen Caldicott said, a nuclear accident anywhere in the world is a nuclear accident everywhere in the world. Test radiation fallout, Cordova reports, has had devastating health consequences decades later. But while I know of no people who lost their lives during the test, the organization I co-founded has documented many instances of families in New Mexico with 4 and 5 generations of cancer since the bomb was detonated. Despite this, she notes, New Mexicans who were likely exposed to fallout from Trinity have never been eligible for compensation under the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. 1990 law that's provided billions of dollars to people exposed during subsequent tests on U.S. soil or while mining uranium. The movie portrays Oppenheimer rightly, Oppenheimer the scientist, as the flawed man he was. But as Cordova laments, the film doubles down on the silence we've been living with for 8 decades about the loss of life and health that was a consequence of the development and testing of the atomic bomb. That's an injustice in search of a solution, almost 8 decades in the making. By the way, if you're wondering how long Regal's concession stand lines were on Sunday, let's just say the other summer blockbuster, Barbie, was being shown in 3 other theaters at roughly the same starting time as Oppenheimer. So yes, it took a while to get our popcorn dog. Oh yeah, on a somewhat lighter note, inflation is down, consumer spending is up, and everyone's coming around to the mantra, the future's so bright, you gotta wear shades. And you know what? Robert Oppenheimer, no doubt, agree. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Hey, happy birthday to my one and only better half, Kelly. And thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.